every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick five with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, tiny-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners or other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Call it hour two, about 20 minutes in. So actually, well, yeah, we are 20 minutes behind. All right. we'll do the best we can to catch up. I want to catch up with Andy Belfiore, who, of course, for so long was here in New York with the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association and did such tremendous work as literally the entry mate with Rick Violette. Tomorrow they will run the Rick Violette Stake, and it's Thoroughbred Aftercare as the focus on the day. And Andy and Rick crafted a fabulous retraining program for New York that came together quickly and instantly became one of the best in the industry. Andy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good, and people can probably hear they can probably hear the music over the intercom at Saratoga. So you're somewhere on the grounds, I know, having a meeting, but that's pretty funny that I can hear Earth Angel.
Well, actually, no. I'm at a Marriott in Saratoga meeting.
Okay, so
I don't know what you're hearing.
All right, so it's coming. It's coming in from the ambient speakers here. It's kind of funny. I'm sorry. I'm not going to see you, but I'm glad you're up, and I know we'll see you as the summer progresses. And first of all, give everybody an update on your professional change, because you left New York in favor of Florida.
I did indeed. Last fall, I took a job as the executive director of the Florida Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. So I'm basically doing what I was doing in New York with Rick and with Joe Applebaum. I'm now in Florida, and Joe Orsino is our president down there, and doing the same kind of work that I did for New York racing.
Well, one of the things, of course, that you did and did so well, and with Rick and his long tenure at the head of NYTHA, was create the aftercare program, the Take Two, and that program, Andy, went from zero to full speed in no time at all, and it's become really one of the best examples of what's possible when it comes to getting horses off the racetrack, while they're sound, and finding them second to life, and they all like to have jobs. Not too many of them want to be standing out in the field. They like to be engaged, and Take Two has been a huge success.
Yeah, no, and if you can believe it, it's celebrating our 10th anniversary this year.
Wow.
We started in 2012, and at that time it was just the Take Two program, which is focused on creating second careers in the hunter jumper arena for the retired racehorses, and we started with about 8 horse shows in 3 states that year, and now we're at over 400 horse shows across the country. I think 23 different states have Take Two hunter and jumper classes, and we've had, I would say, over 2,000 horses that have competed in these divisions. So they're just demonstrating every day how much horses have to give after they retire from the racetrack. And it's really been an amazing program.
How quickly did things come together, and who was instrumental in making all of this work? Because there's mechanics involved. I know myself, because we've retired, I think, 2 horses into the program over the years. Explain the components that essentially got it off the ground.
Sure. So for the Take Two program, which is just this horse show program, Rick Violet was his brainchild. He worked with the New York Racing Association, New York Thoroughbred Breeders, New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund, and everybody pulled together to create this program. And we actually partnered with the Saratoga Horse Shows at Skidmore College, and Adele Einhorn was running that program at the time. So she helped us get a foot in the door with the horse show world and got us connected with HITS and with David Burton down in Wellington to get the program off the ground. So that was part one of the program. And then part two started a year later. That's our Take the Lead program. And that's the program that actually works with New York's owners and trainers. When they have a horse to retire, they come to Take the Lead. Rick Schasberg is now our president. He took over when Rick sadly passed away. And so with Rick Schasberg and Kristen Mason, who works for NYTHA, and myself, if a trainer or an owner has a horse they want to retire from a NYRA racetrack, they get in touch. And then we are partnered with all the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance accredited organizations, so we can find them homes and make sure that they go on to a happy and healthy retirement. And through that program, we're closing in on 1,000 horses that we've retired through Take the Lead.
Andy Belfiore with us, who, of course, now is with the Thoroughbred Horsemen Association in Florida. But how many years were you here, Andy? How long was your tenure?
Well, I started actually at the end of 2011, and Take Two launched about 3 months after I started. So I was there for about 8 years. And then moved down to Florida I actually went to work for the THA for their strategic yes. plan to reduce equine fatalities for 2 years, and then starting last year, I moved to Florida full time. So
the expense and explain what kind of an investment is necessary and what your advice is to owners that. Grapple with the decision making, and either going ahead and picking up the phone or having a trainer, their trainer, reach out and say, we think he's ready, or the time is right, because one of the things that we've stressed for years, the concept of not being lured into one more race and thinking that, oh, he's got another good race in him, because it's so much easier for aftercare organizations to adopt out a sound horse, to retrain and adopt a sound horse. But if one comes off the racetrack injured, there's 6 months, sometimes a year, that has to go into just getting them healthy enough to retrain. So sound horses off the racetrack, there's a real value to them, and it can't be driven home enough how important it is to make the decision while your horse is sound.
Yeah, and you're 100% right. I mean, number one, I think every owner should have an aftercare plan. They should know that, they should put a little bit of money aside, although the Take the Lead program is going to step up and cover a lot of costs, because we do get our money from the industry. So, we want to give that back and support the owners and trainers who are trying to do the right thing and find the right homes for their horses. But you're 1,000% right, and the most important component is knowing when is the right time to retire. And not only is it better for the racehorse and for his prospects as a second career, but it's better for the owner too, because if you keep that horse in training, you push it too far, you're spending a lot of money to keep that horse in training, and the results are not going to benefit you. That horse is not going to be successful. He's not going to be able to perform to the best of his ability. And so not only you're spending money, putting good money after bad, but you're also making it harder to get that horse into a second career, and making that transition from racetrack to his second career more difficult for everybody, more expensive for everybody. So, talking to your trainer, staying on top of it, being realistic in what that horse can accomplish going forward, and, making sure that you're doing all your diagnostics to make sure that you know exactly what's going on with that horse, and then you'll know, okay, you know what? This horse is ready to retire, and then everybody benefits from that.
The activities tomorrow, let everybody know what they can expect when they come to the track and how they can support the effort.
Well, first of all, I will caution that the weather report for tomorrow was a little dicey, and we are talking about potential for some severe thunderstorms. And if it's heavy-duty thunderstorms at 11 o'clock in the morning, I'm afraid we're going to have to pass on the demonstrations. But the plan right now is that starting at 11 o'clock in the morning on the main track at Saratoga, we are going to have Rerun, New Vocations, and Lucky Orphans are going to bring retired racehorses out and show what they can do in their second careers. We have horses that are doing Hunter Jumper. We have horses that are doing Western Pleasure. And Lucky Orphans actually has a therapy horse that's going to go through an obstacle course and show what he can do. So we've got that. That'll go on from 11 to 12 on the main track, weather permitting. We also have a horse called Flash Trading that's coming in from Rerun. He's going to be in what they call the horse scent stall, which is behind the grandstand at Saratoga. He'll be hanging out all afternoon, and people can come by and get their picture taken and meet him. And he's a very kind horse, loves people, so they'll be able to pet him on the nose and just, learn a little bit one-on-one as what happens with these horses. Because I think, one of the goals of Aftercare Day is just to show how much New York's industry supports aftercare. From, like I said, New York Thoroughbred Breeders, New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund, to New York Racing Association, to the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen, and Take Two and Take the Lead, combined we contribute about $1.5 million a year towards aftercare. And, we want people to know that these horses we make sure as best we can that they have a really good life after they leave the racetrack. We take that responsibility really seriously. And, you know, just so that people don't have the misconception that once their racing career is over, we're done with you. We don't care what happens to you. You know, we care, you know, as much as you possibly could, and we put as many resources as we can into making sure that they have their second careers and a safe and happy life. And then in addition, we'll have the community booth behind the jocks room, and we're going to have all the aftercare organizations that we partner with. We'll have information and, you know, caps and T-shirts if you want to make a donation. If you have questions to ask, you know, we'll be there all afternoon to provide that.
Outstanding. Andy, you mentioned, run down those names again. Of course, Monday, was it Monday? Yeah, because today, Tuesday, yeah, Monday evening, we're over at Basin Grill, where Lisa Malloy and the rerun team had a really nice function. Run down the, you know, the teams that the retraining organizations that will be involved.
Okay, so in addition to Rerun, we have New Vocations. New Vocations has, I think, four different states. They have a New York facility, also Kentucky, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Rerun and New Vocations take the majority of the horses from the NYRA racetracks. We also work with Akendale. We work with Act Naturally. We work with Lucky Orphans, who will be doing a demo. The Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, Old Friends at Cabin Creek. And then new this year to the group is the Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. And that's a new organization that does, you know, takes retired racehorses for therapy horses. So, you know, all of these groups together, you know, we all work together to make sure these horses have good homes after the track.
And Andy, where do people get more information? How, for those that can only, you know, that don't have a horse per se, but to understand how important the work is, there's a lot of horse players that after a good day at the windows, they contribute, you know, fans too, and you can, obviously you can do that tomorrow at the booth, but, you know, the majority of you listening, you know, you probably won't be here until, you know, later in the summer, but where do they go for all the information and to support?
You can go to our website, which is take the number 2 T-Breds, so T-B-R-E-D-S, .com, and you can get a lot of information. You can, you know, right on the homepage, you can click to donate, you can, you know, learn about Take 2 and Take the Lead, and then there's also a link to all our partner organizations and their websites. So you can get a lot of information at take2tbreads.com.
Well, and you can also follow Take 2 T-Breads on Twitter. I'll put up that link as well. Andy, I appreciate this, and of course all the work, people like Lisa, and of course Anna Ford, New Vocations, and there's so many people that tirelessly and frankly anonymously do this work find homes and help get the racetrack out of the racehorse and turn them into, you know, productive long-term workhorses and pleasure horses. And there's so much the thoroughbreds that, you know, can do. Essentially, their aptitudes are just unlimited. So the OTTB community, always fun and worthwhile to have these conversations. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Andy Belfiore, everybody. And Andy, you know, to be honest, greatly missed here in New York, and, you know, our loss certainly a gain for Florida horsemen and their interests. We're going to get Sid in here, and we'll take a cup of Casey said. All right, no problem, Case. While Casey gets ready to bring Sid in, and Pat Cummings will join us at the top of the hour. Looking for Gary Gullo this morning as well. Seth Merrow says he's on his way over after he finishes his Capital OTB work this morning. I should mention, actually, while we wait for scratches, let's see if Andy Serling has gotten the scratch sheet. Out of into the intranet world. Take a look, and the answer is yes. Here we go. 12 minutes ago, here are the scratches out on Twitter, and I'll make the adjustments. I've actually got the, because we're going to be in the car right away as soon as I get home, but I put the selections up pretty early this morning for today. It's a tricky card. Not necessarily big overflow fields this morning, and oh, look at this. Seth Merrow he's got the Capital OTB golf cart. You have to pose with the golf cart, Seth. This is a fabulous visage. There you go. One of those. That's perfect. All right. Here we go. Let's see. Let me get the whole card in. Nice. Nice. Seth's going to sit in for the second half of the show. Who knew? The scratches, a quick rundown. We'll work it backwards, actually, from the 10th. Take out Rum and Tonic, who I thought had a good shot in here, actually, at a square price, 6-1 or 5-1. Rum and Tonic, the 2 is out of the nightcap, as is the 5. Vinny 2 cents, who had less of a shot, was 30-1. Take all the MTOs out, of course. That includes the 7-8-9 in the stake. Otherwise, the stake goes as is. No changes in the 8th, and the 8th is the site of my DePaula play of the day for Capital OTB, and honestly, this is a really good race. It's a second-level open company allowance. Fillies and mares going three quarters on the main, and I reached for Secret Love, John Kimmel, Johnny Velasquez. I think there's a real nice trip in here in the offing for Secret Love. Yeah, the horse to beat, obviously, is Smash Ticket at 5-2. And Betsy Blue is pretty consistent as well. The 6 at 6-1 for Linda Rice. But not necessarily as much of a win candidate, but you got to respect. And I thought Gargan, and we saw Gargan drive by earlier, Peace of My Heart, I thought was the more viable part of the entry. There's an ownership entry for is that Flying P, I think. Peace of My Heart, I thought the 1A, 4-1. So anyway, I put the 4 on top. Secret Love, your DePaula play of the day. The 7th, you can take out, obviously, the MTO, the 10, but the 7 comes out, Spicy Ginger. Jump to the 4th race, where the 7, it was an MTO. That can take out that, and the same thing with all those MTOs in the 3rd race, the 1X, the 1A, the 2B, and the 10, and you also are going to take out the 9, Rent Control. Oh, and the 8, Gracefully Wild, who I thought had a look for Eddie Barker. Wow. So take 2 live horses out and 4 MTOs out of the 3rd. And then in the 2nd race, take the 1, Evoking, who was a major player in that claiming event, non-winners of 2 lifetime at 7/8. So there's your scratches today, and we'll probably get some Seth Merrow opinions as the morning progresses. Going to see about Sid, if Casey... go ahead, Case. You can get Sid. And I can say good morning, Seth, first of all. Hello.
Good morning.
How are you?
Hot. It's a little steamy here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, when you see me in a short sleeve shirt.
Oh, that's your key.
That's.
But you're looking snappy, as usual.
Thank you.
And I was wearing one of your ties this morning, and my co-host, Anthony Marmino, said, a very good-looking, classy tie. If I'm going to a big event, I should stick with that tie. It was blue and...
Which one? Which
blue, and it was a little subtle, but it was blue, a little shiny. It was a nice tie.
Well, wow. Anything that's coming out of my collection is going to be a nice enough tie. And well, now, of course, you've got this whole roster of ties that Sally Ellen Hurst from Country Life Farm was nice enough to give you.
I'm firing those up on Sunday mornings.
Oh, all right. Well, now you'll have me remotely on Sunday as we'll be driving from Jersey, from the Haskell down to Colonial. Let me say good morning to Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb. I will check Dark Sky in a minute, but I'm going to guess it's going to be hotter here today than it's going to be in Tampa.
You're going on a limb there.
Yeah. I should ask you, actually, because this is your first full summer, right? What's it been like so far?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I love hot weather. For me, it's great, but the people here in Tampa, they don't like it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they think it's the worst time of the year, but I love it.
You know, Tina and I, when school would end and I would have to take my vacation, there were several years that we would go down to when my parents had the place in Boynton, and we would go down there. Tina loved it. She loves the heat. So it's a funny. Some people thrive on it. I'm a non-sweater, so it doesn't bother me that much. Seth is already Seth.
I was watching some kind of podcast or something last week, and they had a guest on from Miami, and it was kind of interesting because the host said, well, now that you're in Miami, I have to ask you the question, because everybody complains about the heat in Miami in the summertime, so what do you think? And the guest said, I love it here in the summertime. I think it's great. It's 80-something outside, so I think it's very comfortable. I've since talked to a couple of actual Floridians, and they're like, this guy's crazy.
Well, they love it. Yeah. they love it at that this time of year because all of the snowbirds are gone. all the annoying, East Coast people, all the Quebecois, all the
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
All the Pepsis, they've all gone back up to, back up to Quebec, Tabernac. So, Sid, let's touch on a few things, because I had a feeling, even before you wrote the piece on the piece on Justify, it sure felt like the weekend was notable, and Justify, for a horse that didn't start his own career until three, it's pretty amazing that he's got these precocious runners, seems to be getting all different kinds, haven't even talked yet in North America about the turf and the Scat Daddy influence. What I haven't had a chance to read your piece, so give everybody a primer on your thoughts.
Well, no, what you say is exactly right. It's, on the surface, he didn't race at two. He started at three, and he, was able to win at a mile and a half, and he's a big, big horse, which doesn't suggest that he's going to be a precocious sire. He's out of a dam stage magic that didn't win until September of her three-year-old season. And she's by Go Zapper, who was similar racing-wise in the sense that, he won at a mile and a quarter, but he didn't run. He only ran twice at two in November and December. So the intriguing question is, where is this coming from? Well, it's very easy. Two things. First off, he had a lot of speed himself. He just didn't happen to run at two. And Bob Baffert said he had the speed to win the Breeders' Cup Sprint or the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile or the Classic. In other words, he could sprint, go a mile, and obviously, go a mile and a quarter and up. Well, that's a trait that's part of his sire line, speed, because the sire, and I mentioned this in the column, Scat Daddy, Johannesburg, Hennessy, Stormcat, Stormbird, that entire sire line sequence were all grade one winners at two. And every one of them, except for Stormcat, stood at Ashford. And then, for further proof, you look at the Scat Daddy Sons that Coolmore, which is Ashford, has collected. And you see that No Name Never has been a terrific sire in Europe of speed horses and two-year-olds. No Name Never, just like his own sire, Scat Daddy, was a champion first crop sire. You look at Caravaggio, his first crop or three, he had 26 two-year-old winners last year. He's got a son in Ireland, Sioux Nation at Coolmore, who to this day already has 17 two-year-old winners. And so what you have is, this is a dominant trait of the sire line. And, excuse me, in Justify's case, he just, with that Ghost Zapper influence and stuff, he was able to take that speed and go as far as he needed to, but he has that speed. And as Bob Baffert said, for a big horse, he was extremely nimble and did not hit the ground hard at all. Are you there?
We are, absolutely.
Okay. So that's basically a recap of his own profile. And, you know, as surprising as it is, it's a shame because Francis has written an article that we couldn't get up on our blog site at Wirt Thurberg. We had a technical issue. But she pointed out, Steve, that he's had four winners so far and two, you know, graded winners. But none of the big auction horses have run yet. So, and he had massive high-priced auction horses. So we're seeing something here. In fact, one of those Justify winners was a $15,000 yearling. So we're seeing so far not even the best, at least as measured by, certainly Statuette is one of the best, but she wasn't sold at auction. She's a homebred for Coolmore. That's a Group 2 winner in Europe. Her dam was a multiple Group 1 winner and sold for $8 million. And, you know, that's the type of mare that Justify got, obviously. But the auction horses haven't hit the track yet, the high-priced ones. So if we're seeing this kind of stuff middle of July, you know, the assumption, A, would be that Justify got better as he got older, obviously. But more importantly for Justify, his expensive horses haven't even hit the track yet. So, you know, it could be that, you know, we could have another very big stallion emerging here in him. It's early, of course, but the signs are pretty good.
Just looking, Statuette was the winner at the Curra, and Just Cindy, of course, who we saw opening day here, and I talked yesterday to Eddie Keneally about her and how, you know, impressed he's been with her precocity, but also her, you know, how polished. Then there's Tahoma that was second in that Futurity race at Santa Anita, so stakes placed, and well as a maiden winner in May, as early as May. I think, was that the earliest winner? Yeah, the May, actually, yeah, May 22nd. That was the earliest winner, Tahoma. Out of the Rahi mare, and then Prove Right is the fourth one, the maiden winner at Churchill on June 26th. So we'll be seeing, you know, obviously more as the summer progresses. And I didn't even look yet at the Del Mar opening day card, other than the stake, other than the Oceanside. But I imagine Baffert himself has got a few in the barn.
Well, and you haven't read my column, but the interesting thing about Jeff Cindy, who won the Schuylerville Grade 3, is that he bought the dam, and he owned the mare up until the very day before she foaled. Therefore, except for a matter of one day, he would have been the breeder of that horse. He sold the mare to Fred Mitchell of Parkland, and the very next day she foaled. And Fred,
unbelievable!
Yeah,
that's great. That's great. You know, it's interesting too because, of course, Fred Mitchell, a litany of success, and not the least of which, you know, involving, you know, Beholder and you know, and the whole, you know, the whole family involved, but he's obviously, you know, continuing to, you know, to work the broodmare band, and it just kind of shows you, Sid, that, I mean, even John Nayrud into his hundreds, he kept tinkering, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, he apparently just really saw the mare in the catalog. She's been in the February sale. On February 11th, she was supposed to sell. But John Sakura called Bob Backward up and said, "Bob, I can't bring the mare to the sale. She's all bagged up. Going to have a foal. You don't want to have a foal in the sale ring." So Bob said, "Okay, yeah, take her out." So the mare never arrived in the sale ground. This is February 11th. Fred Mitchell goes to John Sakura's barn and says, "Where's that mare?" And calls up Baffert, and Baffert said, "I had to take her out because she's going to foal tomorrow." He said, "What do you want for her?" Baffert gave a price. He said, "I'll buy her." Boom, done. The next day, she foals.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
At John's farm, Hillendale.
How did Baffert end up with her, Sid? Because she was a Larry Jones trainee, I think, and one of Larry's clients.
Well, the way Baffert ended up with her was it was the Keeneland November sale. He's got all these stallion seasons, obviously. And he's looking for a mare to breed to one of them, right?
Okay.
And he had Donato. He saw a picture of Philly. Looked up her past performance and saw she was real fast up to a mile. Had Donato Lani go over and look at her. Donato said, "Yeah, she's okay, but she's small. But, you know, otherwise she's fine." And so Bob, sight unseen, live, went ahead and bought her for $90,000.
And then, unbelievable.
And then he bred her to Justify early and took her to California because he wanted to foal her in a California bred program. But then in December, he said, "You know, what the hell am I doing?" And he sent her back to put in the Keeneland November sale. Or Keeneland January sale. She got no action whatsoever. Then Boyd Brownie comes up from Fasig Kipton and says, "I can sell her for you the next month in Fasig Kipton, February." Bob says, "All right." Puts her in that sale. And then I just described to you the events that John Sikora said, "I can't bring her to the sale. She's going to foal." And, you know, so one thing led to the other. But the end result was Bob was one day too late in being the listed breeder of the graded winner by Justify. And conversely, Fred Mitchell only had to hold a mare for one day to be a breeder.
Well, and then, you know, now the mare is a producer of a graded stake winner. So it there's a lot to like going forward. Amazing it just shows you it's amazing the stories. They kind of write themselves, And the other part of the Justify story, I imagine, Sid, is if anybody finds that they've got one that has talent but hasn't shown it on the main track, I mean they're gonna get the opportunity as Scat Daddy's presence in the pedigree, going to get a chance to put them on the grass where, you know, you imagine they're going to be more than okay if you're not satisfied with them on the dirt.
Well, absolutely. And Statuette, obviously, is a Group 2 winner
yes.
on the grass already. But that's the MO of the Scat Daddies, right? They really race well on turf. So it's a very auspicious time for Justify. And, the funny thing about this entire situation, Steve, is that in 2018, right after Bob bought this mare, he actually texted me and said, "I bought this mare, thinking about Farrah, who do you like?" And I said, "Well, let me take a look at it." I texted him back and it said, "Well, you know, Farrah's just so arrogant, but I would rate it to Justify." And that was it. That was the conversation. I never followed it up with Bob or anything until I saw that this was that Justify that won. So
too
Bobby,
funny.
Well, you get, yeah, he gave me an assist on it. I said, I'll take it. Hmm.
Well, I'm just looking ahead, and I wanted to see if there's nothing in this opening day. It's actually Calbred main special for two-year-olds, but there is actually a very interesting Justify that's an MTO tomorrow for Wesley Ward named Rarify. This was a $750,000 Keeneland yearling last year that Wesley has been working steadily and is out of Belle Jolie, which that's the dam of Run Happy, Belle Jolie.
Oh, right. So that's the Run Happy half.
That's a Run Happy half-sister.
So it's training in where? In Keeneland?
Is it Keeneland, and is MTO here tomorrow, or Friday, I should say. Yeah, Friday's first race, a 5.5 on the turf. And we'll see how much rain we get tomorrow, but that's interesting. Probably should find out from Wesley if she's even in town, if he's even brought her here, because she last worked on the 14th at Keeneland. And there's also one at Ellis on Friday for John Ortiz, Justa Warrior, who's out of AZ Warrior. So. That's a Zayat. That was an old Zayat filly.
Right.
And actually, a little bit more elaboration. Hill and Dale was bred by Zayat, and Hill and Dale ended up with her ultimately, and paid a lot at the breeding stock sale, $1.2 million, and then subsequently has sold again in November to Cypress Creek. But this first one, this baby has got, I'm going to assume that Hill and Dale is going to be the breeder.
Wow. Yeah.
AZ Warrior won the Frisette here at Belmont as a two-year-old.
That's right.
So there's another, you like you said, you know, well-bred Justifies that are coming down the pike. Sid, let's slip in another story, and we invite everybody to read Taking Stock in the TDN every week from Sid. And I didn't mention yesterday, over the weekend, of course, going into the weekend, the passing of Kitten's Joy, Sid, and as a racehorse, the next chance we get to talk to Dale Romans, we'll talk about his success on the racetrack. And for our purposes, his success as a sire is a pretty amazing story, because Ken Ramsey single-handedly proved that he was worthy of being a stallion, and he did it in a crazy manner, claiming nickel fillies and mares, $10,000 claiming mares, and he gathered up 120 of them for the first few seasons to be covered by Kitten's Joy, and he produced instantly and the breeding industry by surprise.
It did. You know, it's an unusual story, just exactly what you said. First off, you know, the horse was a champion to begin with. He was a champion turf male. And, you know, these turf horses really aren't very commercial, which kind of forced Ramsey to do this. He'd been doing it with some other stallions that he'd been standing at the time before then, so he had that kind of blueprint for it. But here he got a pretty amazing racehorse to begin with, and he started doing this, and with all these mares that he collected, what really ended up being a fascinating part to the success of a lot of these horses were that an extraordinary amount of those mares had Roberto, or I should say extraordinary amount of graded winners, black belt winners that came out of those mares that he had collected had Roberto in their pedigrees. And he himself, Kitten's Joy, is out of a Lear Fan mare, and Lear Fans by Roberto. Well, it turned out, whether by design or by happenstance, that this bringing Roberto back to Kitten's Joy was an extraordinary pedigree discovery that led to quite a bit of success. And because, you know, in this case, we don't know whether the egg came before the chicken or not, but the end result was it was a highly potent thing. And so many of his top horses have Roberto in their damn side, and of course they have a two-kitten story. And so that was a factor that helped. The other was that Kitten's Joy came up during the era when there were a lot of all-weather tracks around. And so what Randy did, he raced a lot of them, and he sent them to these tracks where there was all-weather racing or turf. And this allowed Kitten's Joy, which is really, this is a really phenomenal statistic, to become the leading general sire in this country twice, despite the fact that the majority of his progeny earnings came on turf or all weather. You know, it's very difficult for a horse to be able to do that, but he did. And then, of course, as the all-weather track started to fade from the landscape, so too did Kitten's Joy's heavy dominance in terms of like becoming a leading sire. However, he was an outstanding stallion, and success internationally kind of came late, but it did show you the kind of, you know, a horse he was, because it's rare for these days for U.S.-based sires to really get traction in Europe. Warfront obviously did with the participation of Coolmore behind him. But otherwise, it's very tough. Kitten's Joy, however, did. He got, you know, horses like Hawkbill, a G1 winner, earned almost $5 million in Europe and abroad. Roaring Lion, a champion three-year-old colt. Who else did he have? Oh, just recently, in more recent times, he had Cameco, who won the, you know, the 2000 Guineas. I mean, these are really high-class European horses that he was able to get, which is really a testament to the type of stallion he was, because he really did not, particularly these last few years, and, you know, he got moved to John Segura's Hillendale in a deal where John and Craig Burnick kind of took 50% of the horse, leaving 50% for the Randy. He certainly got some of his best mares during this last period at Hillendale. So, you know, we're going to be seeing a lot more action from Kitten's Joy, and we're probably going to see even some better quality horses down the road, because unlike the claimers that he began with, he's gotten stakes producers and much richer pedigrees to work with. And so we'll see what happens down the road. But yeah, a terrific loss, a terrific racehorse, and an exceptional stallion.
Well, we'll talk when we get the chance to talk to Dale Romans. We'll let Dale opine about his career on the racetrack, and just glancing at it, it took him three tries to. He actually debuted at Saratoga in 2003, and broke his maiden later that fall at Belmont.
won the Tropical Park Derby to start his three-year-old year at Calder. That came, of course, on New Year's Day. Then he won the Palm Beach. He won the American Turf at Churchill on the Oaks undercard. Second in the Jefferson Cup. Then I remember he went to Colonial, won the Virginia Derby, won the Secretariat. What a run he went on, the Joe Hirsch. Then he was second in the Breeders' Cup that year. That would have been, 2004. So that would have been Lone Star. And Graham Motion, Better Talk Now, beat him. In 2004. And then actually only started, I forget what happened at the end, because he didn't come back until July of that year. He basically was off a good 6, 7, 8 months. And then Dale brought him back. He won the Firecracker on July 4th and then tried the Arlington Million and got beat in the Arlington Million, second to Powers Court. And that was it. So he must have come out of there wrong. But we'll let Dale next time when I get back from next week. We'll get Dale in here. I haven't seen him yet. Yes, I've seen Tammy, but I haven't seen Dale Romans. No. Well, I appreciate it, Sid. I thought these were the two key topics of the weekend and of the week
for
Justify and right Kitten's Joy.
You absolutely nailed the key topics as you normally do.
Well, you're very kind. I do have a harboring. I am harboring a third topic, but I will save it because we're going to be in trouble here. I still got a ton of things to do, but I will text it to you, and you can table it for next week.
All right. You got it.
All right.
Okay. Good talking.
Thanks, Sid. I appreciate it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by and Dale. And we're going to take the break here, our second of the morning and last of the morning. When we come back, we'll have a good 45 minutes or so. Seth Merrow is on hand. Gary Gullo said he cannot get here until 12:30. So we're going to have to do Gullo by phone before we wrap things up. I want to get Gullo on and talk about Saturday's Lustgarten Foundation Day. But Seth Merrow is here, and Pat Cummings is going to join us by phone at some point. I'm sure Pat will be on hand at Saratoga this summer. But for now, we're going to talk to Pat about the opening weekend at Ellis and the first few days of penny breakage. Saw some really stupid Twitter takes, Seth. Hard to believe.
People are against it?
Not against it. I saw somebody that was attempting to admonish Adam Koenig, claiming that this does nothing for anybody. I it's just amazing. It's amazing how.
Was it Marshall Graham who calculated
how much? Marshall, yes, Marshall. Marshall, and all. Listen, all Marshall is an economics professor. I don't know why a guy that teaches economics at a college. I don't know why anybody on Twitter isn't a better individual to comment on this than somebody who teaches economics. He's just a guy that has devoted himself to financials and the study of numbers and how they work and
more money to the horse players. How could that be a negative?
Possibly. Oh, ye of little faith, Seth Merrow. How can you just assume that giving horse players back and lowering takeout is better for them? It's unbelievable. It's amazing. And not only was there the comment about it and a guy saying, to Adam, you didn't do anything. You didn't accomplish anything. All you did was put one over on horse players. It's amazing to me. But then expanded on the stupidity and wanted to drive home all the brilliant points involved. It's amazing. It's really amazing. Pat Cummings next. Gary Gullo and Seth Merrow. The golf cart does need a washing, by the way.
But man, we just got it.
needs a washing.
All right, all right.
I'm a stickler when it comes.
Well, I say we just got it, but we have to clean off the desk every morning because we're right up by Clare Court, so it's a little dusty over there.
Well, we need some rain. The rain will tap things down. Apparently, it's going to. Andy said tomorrow, not so great.
When you were talking about it, I pulled it up on my phone. It looks like it hits 50 or 60% early afternoon, but at the top of the weather page, it said severe thunderstorms possible. So we'll see.
All right. Back after this. Hour three at the races. We're live at Saratoga. Tomorrow we'll be live at Monmouth Park. Monday we'll be live at Colonial.